It is such a pleasure and an honor myself to just be on this platform with you. And I just applaud what Empathy Matters is doing to really show the value drivers of empathy and how important empathy is for such a time as this. It could not be a better movement. It could not be a better platform that you're putting forth. So thank you.
Welcome to Empathy Matters, the podcast that brings humanity back into the heart of business. And now, Empathy Matters.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to have you all with us today. I'm your host, Dr. Naseem Abdi, and it's my honor to introduce today's guest, Roshan Kindred. As the Chief Diversity Officer, Roshan leads PAGE Duties, Strategic Inclusion, Diversity and Equity, ID&E, initiatives, and ensures PageDuty is creating a fair, equitable, and inclusive experience for all members. Roshan brings more than 15 years of experience in ID&E leadership and is passionate about elevating the human experience and engagement by creating a thriving atmosphere where people can have a sense of belonging that frees them to innovate and collaborate with authenticity. It's such an honor to have you on the show, Roshan. Thank you so much for joining us. Even when I was reading the little blurb about you, I couldn't hide my excitement about what you're going to hear today through the conversation we had for the pre-production. I can't wait to share your story. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It is such a pleasure and an honor myself to just be on this platform with you. And I just applaud what Empathy Matters is doing to really show the value drivers of empathy and how important empathy is for such a time as this. It could not be a better movement. It could not be a better platform that you're putting forth. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I would like to jump in and start by asking you about your own story, Roshan, because the first part of the conversation always at this podcast starts by focusing on your empathy-driven approach to leadership and the why behind this role that you have. Because as we all know, we can't be on DE&I without having that our eyes on empathy and empathetic leadership. But what we found out at Storybolt, and thus we started Empathy Matters, is that most of these amazing leaders who are leading the way for DE&I, they have their own why on why being empathetic is so important and bringing that to life. So please tell us about you and your role and your story that got you to this role.
Well, first off, as a Black woman who, a very young Black woman who aspired to be a leader, I found myself lacking those avenues of support for how that happens. You know, everyone knows that you can go to school, you can get formal education, but leadership is something, in my opinion, that is both innate, both is taught, and then is explored. And so what I was looking for early on in my career were those individuals who were willing to go on that exploration with me, who were willing to not just mentor me, but mentor me and sponsor me. And that didn't always come in the form of per se someone in a higher role than me, but someone who was willing to ally with me. And so when I was leading my first large team, it was untraditional at that point to have a remote leader, but I happened to have a very remote leader. And he was so empathetic. He was so in touch with the total human experience that he tapped in and saw that I was looking for something more than just a management position, but I really wanted to be a empathetic leader. And in that day, terms like empathy and mindfulness were not something that was commonly used in the workplace. But this individual really did give me an opportunity to showcase those things. And it's really what motivated me in my career development to shine the light on my superpower. And in doing so, I came across an individual by the name of Andy Buck. And I mentioned him purposely because he had such a profound impact on my life. And Andy was just one of these people. He was so well-rounded. He was someone that you truly wanted to get to know the first time you ever set eyes on him. And he was inclusive just because he loved people and he knew how to connect with them. And in a short period of time, I learned to appreciate, respect, and even adore Andy. We often said that we were siblings from another mother, and we'd spend time, you know, allegedly developing a strategy, but we'd end up talking about his childhood, his mom and his sister, and how they got involved in a cult. And I shared with him my experience of growing up in Burlingame and being one of only five Black girls in an all-white Catholic school, but how I just loved learning about religion. He'd school me on Tupac and AC/DC, and I'd introduce him to individuals like Layla Hathaway and Brian McKnight. So we were at every pendulum, you know. Yeah, we yeah. Music to unite us, and we just really were we were a kindred spirit to one another. And what I found over time is that Andy started to really implore in me things like Six Sigma and operational supply chain. And these were things that were indicative to his role. And I couldn't understand why, you know, he was doing this. And he would say, I want to make you a well-rounded leader. I want you to know more than just about the people experience, but I want you to know how the people experience impacts the business experience. And what I didn't know at that time, which I obviously know today, is he was truly teaching me about the business imperative of the human experience and how that experience really does drive the bottom line and how I could learn to articulate that. So things like Six Sigma and knowing about RFID only validated my awareness of that vertical, but it also gave me a connection to the business, which I didn't have before. I just had the connection to, to the people and to the customer. And so after 2 years of being together and really learning and elevating, me imparting in him my knowledge and him imparting in me, Andy came in my office one day, and I'll never forget. He looked at me and he said, goodbye. And it was a different kind of goodbye, but I just kind of likened it to he was on his way to go get his marriage certificate with his then fiance, and he was getting ready to go off on a boys' trip for his bachelor weekend. And so I kind of, brushed it off and I said, okay, bye. I reminded him that it was raining outside, or it had just finished raining and the roads were slick. So to be careful and to take his time and to pay attention to the road. And he just kind of, stared at me with this blank but deep look. And it was the last time I ever saw him. And an hour later, he went into a parking lot down the street from our office and he committed suicide. And at that time, I didn't recognize the warning signs, although, today I do. I didn't have a chance to offer support like I had done in the past. I assumed that I'd given him what he needed to face his day. But that experience really showed me that sometimes we have beyond, what we think we're seeing and really look inside of that human being and to realize that we don't know what it takes for a person to get up that morning. And we don't we don't know.
Gosh, Roshan, I want to go deeper. I want to go deeper because I'm like, this story is one of those shocking stories that you think you got to know someone, you're spending time, you're learning from each other. You feel lucky to have such a colleague, such a great mentor beside you. And you get to know that person. And what you're telling me about Andy is exactly the dream colleague that you want to have and the relationship that you had. And still, it came to a day that, and I know how painful it is to share this story, so I appreciate you for sharing it with us through this podcast. And I understand how difficult it is. So thank you for doing this. But if you don't mind, I would like to go deeper and better understand what was it that this relationship, how did it come to a point? And you were saying like there were some signs that you now know how to pay attention. What are those signs that you were not able to pay attention because you were not aware of this kind of situation before? And how you're doing it differently today?
So he would come to work stressed. He would come to work completely red in the face, which was abnormal for him. he would lack the patience to kind of deal with the employees in the way that he had normally dealt with them. And when I asked him, he always had a good explanation that never quite connected the dots. So it was, you know, I was just up. I couldn't get any sleep last night. Well, when you can't get any sleep, yes, your eyes are red, but your entire face isn't discolored. And I think that because I wanted to make sure that I maintained his sense of privacy, and because he didn't offer anything more, I kind of just, you know, left it at that. And what I realized today is asking one question isn't the solution. Being invested in the well-being of your employees means that you have the ability to ask multiple questions throughout a series of time. So it doesn't appear as though you're probing, it appears as though you're invested. And that was the difference. I was invested when it came to things about, you know, his social capacity. When you want to talk about music, you know, we can go deep and talk for hours, but when it came to talking about his emotions, when it came to talking about what did it take for you to get to the office today? Was it just traffic? Was it just not sleeping? Was it, hey, let's go for a walk and just talk? And let's not always do that when you're displaying signs of stress. Let's walk and talk when we're just having a regular meeting.
Everything is good. Yeah, exactly.
I want to know about your children. I want you to feel comfortable celebrating the milestones of your kids' life so that when you have to say something difficult or something trying or something uncharted has happened in your child's life, you say, you can feel that you have a village to support you, that you really have a team of people who are connected to who you are as an individual, and you don't have to bring them up to speed because they've been with you during the journey.
And absolutely, so absolutely.
Those are the things that I do differently now. I make it a point to know, you know, my employees' children's, their husbands, their dogs. I'm a dog mom, so that's important. But I'm also connected to what's important to them. So whether it is travel, whether it is promotability, whether it is sponsorship, whether it is knitting, I connect to those things that they believe are their gifts and that bring value into the business. And I've found with the people that I've dealt with is that those were the key drivers for retention. It was not always being able to give them a promotion or always being able to give them more money or stock options. It was creating a culture where they felt and saw their direct contribution, that they felt connected to the business, they felt connected to your vision, but most importantly, they saw their vision in your vision. So it wasn't just your vision that you were promoting. It was the collaboration of shared trust. It was a collaboration of shared insights that were being put forth as the vision of that team or the vision of that organization. And those have been the people that have stuck with me throughout my career journey, throughout their career journey. And as recent as Saturday afternoon, I had someone tell me, I am just so grateful that you coached me to go back to school. And now I have a double master's in information technology. And I feel so empowered to weather the different uncertainties of my career because my education has given me options. And I just politely told him, I didn't earn that degree. You did. All I did was plant the seed into the greatness that I saw in you. And I made you believe it for yourself.
This episode is brought to you by Storybolt. Storybolt is a corporate inclusion training events company. We draw from our library of over 4,000 documentary films and subject matter experts to facilitate active online training sessions that deliver measurable attitude change toward inclusive behaviors.
Which is exactly what a real, amazing, inclusive, and empathetic leader would do, right? And you mentioned something, Roshan, that stayed with me. There is a fine line between getting closer to each other and helping out each other and like respecting the privacy of the other person. And that was, I think, that was the struggle that you had when you were trying to ask questions from Andy and how to really be there for him when he needed you to be there. Is that something that you still feel today, or how did you find, how do you, what ways you found to overcome that struggle in building those relationships?
I think the key word there is building, and that when you're, you know, when you're working on a widget, you can build in the dark, right? So you're like in the think tank, you're in the lab. When you're working with human beings, you have to develop trust, you have to develop transparency, but you also have to develop accountability. And that doesn't happen in the midst of a crisis, because in the midst of the crisis, you're trying to get footing, you're trying to get, you want clarity, you want something that's resound. And so what I do is develop, you know, trustworthy relationships with my team. I make myself trustworthy. I display accountability. I also display vulnerability, because one of the things that most employees and most individuals, you know, we're all kind of searching. We call it lifing now, but we're lifing this thing. And people want to align themselves with real people. People want to align themselves with people who are approachable, who are not just inspirational, but people who can sit down with you and not have a cape on, who can sit down with you and say, before we got on this call, you know, my kid was running around with no diaper on, or I am trying to keep it all together. And I think it's those things when people can see who you are behind the scenes, yet watch you go out and on a stage or deliver a keynote with such eloquence that you would think that your life was not flawed, it gives them a roadmap to say, I can too. And so those are some of the things that I do, is to just make sure that I'm always fostering. You know, we kind of throw that word around, but fostering really means to me to bring in close, to create a sense of safety and security, and to nurture something to the point where it's able to shine its true authentic meaning. And so I try to foster very good relationships, very honest and candid relationships with my team and my colleagues. So they know my voice. They know that when I have to put on my chief diversity hat, and that means, sharing space for all voices. So it may not particularly center on my sole opinion, but it is the opinion of all of the people that I have to hold myself accountable to. And so it's those type of things of being able to truly know who you're talking to and know the different levels and personas of that individual.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Roshan, I just came back from a travel to South by Southwest in Austin, which I had the privilege and honor to get to meet Brené Brown, which I adore. She's just, and talking about vulnerability and being real. And they were talking about, it was a session about all people are afraid of AI, artificial intelligence, and she and Esther Perel, which was another amazing speaker that I got to learn about and got to know her. We're talking about another AI that is more dangerous these days, which is artificial intimacy, and how we are all think we are connected. We are getting a lot of likes on social media. We are announcing big initiatives on our LinkedIn or on our personal social media, and we have a lot of followers. But at the end of the day, do we have anyone that we can call and ask them to feed our dog if we need? Do we have someone who can, as you said, you shared beautifully, to build that relationship with, so they can rely on us and we can rely on them when we need a real help, and Andy needed the real help and you were sharing. So that stayed with me, that there is an AI that is way more dangerous these days, that we all are sort of living and breathing in it, unfortunately, because of the setting that we have. And how can we be more real, more authentic, be ourselves and show? I feel like during the COVID time where we had all the meetings on Zoom, and there was a kid who, I had my two boys doing kindergarten and elementary school on Zoom, and they were frustrated. So they jumped in between my meetings, and I got to introduce them to my, you know, to my partners, relationships that I had, or saw like pets coming, walking in front of the camera. That brought us more real, but somehow we started stepping away again, and how should we remember to keep that real and alive in every interactions that they have? Which takes me to another question that I have for you. I would love to know more about your role today at your organization, PagerDuty, and would love to hear from you how you're bringing empathy, which most of the time seen as an abstract concept, to a more concrete, like an actionable item within a busy time of the work and organization. As you mentioned, there is business case always for building a more sense of belonging and culture of empathy. We build relationships that brings more retention to workplace, right? It's better than any offer or promotion or anything else. But how would you do it within this heavy load of work and make it actionable? If you could give us some concrete examples, I would really appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. So you touched on a couple things. You touched on COVID, you touched on AI, and then you end it with empathy. And so I kind of want to weave all of that into one formidable response. And so when we think about the time that we spent in COVID, I think as a world, it was one of the times where we all had to understand and know our mortality. We had to deal with vulnerability, and we had to deal with isolation. And so that brings our psychosis to a level that we've never really had to experience on a world level. So it's that feeling of, I don't have any place to go. So the only place I can go is within. And for those of us, for me as an empath, that's exploration. For someone who's not in tune with their feeling, that invokes fear. And everyone else is somewhere, you know, along that pendulum. And so what we're dealing with coming out of COVID is the emergence of these people who have had this life awakening moment. Some of us know what to do with it. Some of us don't know what to do with it. Some of us are exploring what to do with it. And so that's what I call our new nature. But our behavior is always based on our experiences, which is a reflection of our old nature. And so what we have to do is really lean in and take this experience and say, who am I today? I don't want to leave that old nature behind because there's best practices there. However, we live in a whole different world. And so we have to acknowledge this new nature and then create some new experiences. And that is where the empathy and the AI comes in. And so when we call anything fear, that's the, you know, in my opinion, that's the fear is really the false evidence of things being appearing real. But that just because they appear real, don't make them real. You write the narrative to your story. You assign fear. You can assign hope. You can assign inspiration. So choose which one you want based on what new experience you're trying to create. I'm trying to create, you know, experiences that are curious, experiences that invoke innovation, but also bring the human experience, that empathetic draw into it. Because should we ever have to face that again, I would hope that experience, that COVID experience, gave us some best practices on how to navigate if we have to face some uncertainties again. And so what I try to do at PagerDuty is, you know, we are an organization that's full of incredible minds, very boisterous individuals, very individuals that are in touch with social impact and equity and inclusion. And so I try to weave those things into things that make sense for our employee base. So when we think about, you know, we have this platform called Hack Week, and you can create, you know, whatever you want to create out of it. I'm always looking at, what inputs from empathy are you driving into that? Like, how are you going to position your outcome to be something that people can ingest very easily, but also apply? And so when I think about AI, I feel like AI takes all of that and to another level, but it's a perspective. And I think we have to really be keen on what AI is. AI is advancing our perspective. So whatever you put into that engine is what is going to come out, but it's going to continuously iterate. So my advice to those that are dealing with AI is that be mindful and empathetic as to what you're putting in the tool. Make sure that you're not putting bias into the tool. Make sure that you are inputting empathy. Make sure that you are inputting things that promote well-being, and that tool will iterate off of that information. But if you're not fueling it with something that's going to empower it to be an empathetic vessel, then it will just take in information as widgets. And that's not what it is. It's changing lives. It's having, it's accelerating impact. And so my approach towards AI is to make sure that I use it in a way that it's going to drive more empathetic leaders, that it's going to empower us with the right tools to make more inclusive decisions that then draw us to innovation, because we have a broader spectrum of what we're thinking about, and that lead to better outcomes. And so I'm actually tanking something with a couple of engineers today, and literally right before this call, my sister asked, she said, "You've thought of another idea?" And I said, "I have. I'm like the mastermind, but I can't work alone. I have to work inclusively and collaboratively. So I'm grabbing this engineer and this person over here. And together, we're going to come up with something to see if we can't help our work experience." And she's like, "Oh my God, you're always thinking." And I was like, "No, I'm just empowered by such mindfulness in my organization and brilliance of just trying to weave like how all that comes together." And so for me, that's a very tangible experience of what I'm doing personally to weave empathy into, you know, my perception of AI, how I communicate AI, but then how I bring that into my own organization and create an actual widget that comes about and uses both AI, uses my past experiences and the new ones that I'm creating in order to create better outcomes for our teams.
I love that. I love that, Roshan. And I have to ask you, Roshan, because I'm sure our audience are curious to learn more. If you could tell us more about PagerDuty and what you do at, like, what PagerDuty does, and who are the employee base, who are the clients, what type of innovation you're bringing to the board, that would put it to a great perspective then.
Absolutely. So, PagerDuty is a operations platform where we have offices in San Francisco, Toronto, Atlanta. We have over approximately 1,100 employees around the world. 59% of them are in the United States. Our board has, I think as of last week, 55% women. 55% female, 45% male. But really, when I think about PagerDuty, we are taking our operations platform and using it to help some of the world's largest customers solve big problems, and using things like AI automation and incident response to really drive better outcomes for our customers, and really ensuring that our customers' business stays, secure, stays on time, and really helps troubleshoot instances when there is downtime. And so a remarkable organization led by Jennifer Tejada, who is our CEO and chairwoman, and such an inspiration to work under her leadership, but also the leadership of our senior executive team. I mean, just remarkable individuals from the legal realm, from people management, from marketing, just really excited to have subject matter experts sitting at your fingertips, really for you to learn from, to be empowered by, but also to call your colleagues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's amazing to hear. Congratulations to all of you for bringing such an exciting concept to life together through an inclusive lens. My other question actually is about, Roshan, how we know that stories can be profoundly transformative. And have you ever used the power of your organization and employees' stories to build empathy in the workplace? And can you please share some examples, or if you have one, and then if you have advice for other leaders to do the same?
Absolutely. And I apologize too. I didn't answer your last question. So for me at PagerDuty, I am actually the chief diversity officer. And I feel my job is really to make sure that all employees feel seen, heard, and belong, and to create innovative solutions that ensure our culture really embodies that. And so when I think when I think about empathy, you know, it's centered at the core of who I am as an empath. But when I think about specifically within my own leadership style, I make sure that I convey that, and I look for opportunities for other people to do so and set that stage in that platform. And I remember just the other day, I was talking to a leader and we were collaborating, and she was sharing her notes. And the first thing she said before she even began was, "I'm sharing my notes, and if anyone is visually impaired, I want to highlight what I've done to support, you know, those that are visually impaired." And I just had to pause right there. And I just really let everyone sit with that comment and just acknowledge how grateful I was that she, here it was unprompted. You know, it's not something that was, I asked for, but she shared that, you know, she had made that allowance. And I said, you know, I'm just want to give you, you know, accolades. And she said, "You don't have to give me accolades. This is what I do. I have norms within my team. And I've taken the time to understand the diverse perspective of my team. And so we have our own team norms in addition to our company norms that really support the well-being and supports my team to thrive." And I was just blown away. And I said, you know, sometimes in this work, we feel like we are constantly having to educate and advocate for those things. And you don't always have that full circle moment where you see it landing. But here it was, you know, this leader had done that and then some. And so I would say to anyone, it's not about putting on a campaign. It is not about, you know, having to be the person that is, "I'm the champion for X," or "I believe in Y." It is about you as an individual taking time to go on your own personal journey and asking yourself, "Where are my gaps? How can I be more empathetic? And what steps can I take with the ones that are right before me?" And just model that. And if you model it and you have anyone that reports to you, even the ones that you call daughter or son or them and they will then go on and magnify that, and they will embody that. And so I would say start small. It doesn't take a lot to create a movement. It just takes consistency. And so I would say just model what you want the world to be like, and you will see that you have helped to bring about that change.
Absolutely. You beautifully brought us to the conclusion that I was looking for on what to do and how to do it. I can't believe that we already passed the 30-minute time that we said we were going to have together. Honestly, I can't believe, and there's a lot of other topics that I would like to discuss, but I will leave it for another episode. Hopefully, we will have the opportunity to have you. Roshan, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Empathy Matters. Remember, the journey toward building an empathetic workplace doesn't end here. It's an ongoing commitment. And as Roshan said, it's the keyword is building, and we have to continue. And we trust that the insights you've acquired will be a catalyst for positive change in your organization. Thank you all for joining us. And we look forward to many, many more episodes about stories on empathy.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Empathy Matters, Stories of Corporate Impact.